would be your criteria in selecting those two teams that are not undefeated?
Well, I have to fill out a ballot every week, and what I can tell you is it's not easy to just keep it to one thing. And maybe the best way is to try to be consistent. But I went back and looked at my ballot, and I had Mississippi State ranked ahead of Florida State because I really used metrics to separate those two, and just about anything you look at would tell you that Mississippi State is the better team, has been the more accomplished team so far. Then I get to the one-loss teams. And I mean, nothing says you have to put the two undefeated teams up top. I just did it, and I think most people will. But then I get to 3 and 4, and I went with Oregon and Auburn in those three spots because of their wins. I like the fact that Oregon has a big win over Michigan State. Auburn has a big win at Kansas State, and they have some other good wins on their resumes as well, which to me is kind of what put them ahead of Alabama, because they don't even have a big win in the SEC yet. It's as tough as the conference is. The best win is at West Virginia. But then you start looking at it, and my rationale for, 3 and 4, I guess technically should also apply to one-loss Arizona, which won at Oregon, and I can't justify that part, And so then I put Alabama at 5 based on the eye test because I just think they're better than the teams that are right behind them on my ballot. But then I go to quality of loss to rank Notre Dame over Baylor, even though I could easily go to quality the best win and rank Baylor over Notre Dame. So it's like you drive yourself crazy when you look at it. And I think the bottom line is these teams 1 through 12, I mean, include the two undefeated teams in that mix, they can all beat each other on a given day. There's not a dominant team this year. You can see everyone's flaws. I mean, some teams have to get them in the right matchup, and that might not come until November in some cases just to see what their weakness is. But I think the weaknesses for all of these teams have been very obvious for a while, and that's what makes it so difficult to do. Because I could go through my top 10 and give you the reason that I put Team A ahead of Team B, and I could turn right around and give you a good reason that you should put Team B ahead of Team A instead. And so that's the way it sets up. And because of that, I don't think that the committee can really mess this up. Not this week. They maybe could down the line. I think it's pretty hard to come up with wrong answers at this stage just because I think there's so little separating these teams.
Let me spend a little time coming and actually spend some time talking about those two teams from the Magnolia State. I know you were raised in that state, so you probably have a lot of friends that are still left in that state and probably want to hear your thoughts. But let me go to Ole Miss and Mississippi State. Is there any way that Ole Miss, obviously they've got some quality wins in front of them if they're able to win and to be able to rebound off of that disappointing loss in Baton Rouge. But can Ole Miss work their way right back in this conversation with a win against Auburn and win against Mississippi State and be there at the end? If nobody like Alabama loses, like if Alabama runs the table, do you put an Ole Miss team in there because they beat they beat Alabama straight up?
Yeah, I think, first of all, you got to start with, what the tiebreakers are in the division. And, if Ole Miss wins out,
they're in.
I mean, they're in the SEC championship game. And then if they win it, I think and this applies to Georgia as well, even though their schedule's been a lot easier on the east side, I think if anyone wins the SEC with fewer than two losses, they're in the playoff. I think the big question becomes, what if you finish with one loss but you don't get into the championship game, which is something that could happen to Alabama if Ole Miss were to win out. Then what do you, what does the committee do with them? I think Alabama could go either way if they end up in that position. Now, obviously, the more West Virginia wins, the more it helps Alabama because that's a win you weren't counting on before the season to help your resume. And at this point, West Virginia's got a chance to win the Big 12 because their home schedule helps out. But then I think you mentioned it a while ago, the head-to-head. I think it's going to be fascinating to see how the selection committee handles it because on their list of what their responsibility is, or I should say the write-up of what their responsibility is and how they operate, they list like 5 things that they're going to consider. They're not the only 5 things they're allowed to consider, but there are 5 that they want to be sure everyone's aware of, and one of them is head-to-head. And we're going to see these first rankings tomorrow, and to the best of my knowledge, there are 5 head-to-head results between the one-loss teams. There may be more, but I can think of five. I don't think there's any question that Oregon is going to be ranked ahead of Michigan State, and I don't think there's any question that Auburn is going to be ranked ahead of Kansas State. But what will be interesting is to see how the committee handles the other three, because I think there's a pretty good chance that Alabama will be ahead of Ole Miss. I think there is a better chance than that that TCU is going to be ahead of Baylor, and I think it's a slam dunk that Oregon is going to be ahead of Arizona. And so that's the challenge if you're a committee member is, you know, do you only apply head-to-head in certain cases where it feels right, or do you apply it across the board? And you know what, I think Alabama is going to be in the top four when those things come out tomorrow. But if they don't, I think that'll be the reason. It'll be the head-to-head more than anything else, which is that there will probably be members of the selection committee who don't think that they can put Alabama ahead of Ole Miss, and yet they don't think that they can put Ole Miss in the top five because of what happened last Saturday. So it's not something that's a great concern at this stage. You know, you do wonder, like, if Alabama is ahead of Ole Miss and both teams went out, do the selection committee members or does the committee itself, do they eventually flip that if Ole Miss ends up winning the West? So it's, I think that's what's going to be fun to continue to follow this thing week after week.
All right, so Alabama fans just want to get to the meat and the potatoes. If Alabama wins out, is there any chance, I know we've answered this question a couple of different ways, but what would you say, okay, if we're statistics guys, which we are, your confidence would be, if Alabama goes to Baton Rouge, they beat LSU, they come back home, they return, and they beat the number one team in college football in Mississippi State, then they finish out with Auburn at the end of the season. If they win those games without going to Atlanta, just what's on paper right now, is Alabama part of the college football playoffs?
I'd say 80% chance they are, you know, because there are two things there. One, we don't know for sure how much emphasis the selection committee is going to put on conference championships. I know it's one of the things that's on that short list of criteria that they're to consider. I also know that they did a mock-up, as did a couple other groups. I was a part of one of them, of the 2008 season. And the real selection committee went through their process with 2008, and they put both Oklahoma and Texas in the top four. So they are willing to put two teams from one conference in there. I don't think that's the question. But I think what is a question is, once you get that final data, that final piece of the puzzle, that last weekend when you actually know who the conference champions are, how much value are they going to place on that? Because I guess the scenario that I could see playing out, if Florida State is undefeated, I think there's no question that they're in. Alabama can't control that. If Oregon wins out, I think Oregon with a Pac-12 championship and one loss is going to be in over Alabama, because Oregon still has, especially with that non-conference win over Michigan State, still has a bunch of quality wins. If Kansas State were to win out, and this might blow some people away, but okay, they had the close loss to Auburn, and you could argue they outplayed Auburn in that game. They've already won at Oklahoma. They still have a trip to West Virginia, a trip to TCU, and a trip to Baylor. If they win all those games on the road, I think it's really tough to keep that team out. And so you string it all together, and you make room for the SEC champion, which would not be Alabama in that scenario. Then, I mean, there you go. There's one way it could play out where Alabama could be in trouble. And you know, here's another one: what if everybody beats Auburn the rest of the way, and Ole Miss and Georgia are both one-loss teams going into the SEC championship game, Georgia beats Ole Miss, you could rationalize at that point that Alabama is the number three team in the SEC, because some people would say you have to put Ole Miss ahead of them or keep Ole Miss ahead because they beat them head-to-head and they won the division. Obviously, Georgia is the conference champ would be ahead. So those are a few of the things, that if you're Alabama, that you don't want to see happen.
And Brad, as an Alabama fan base that we're talking to, they're not going to want to hear what I'm about to say, but I've said it throughout the show and I'll say it again. If you're an Alabama fan, you've got to pull for Auburn this weekend. I mean, because then you take it out of the selection committee's hands.
Yes, you're right.
You have to pull for the Auburn Tigers to go to Oxford and beat Ole Miss, and then you win out, and then you go to Atlanta.
Because if you start looking at Ole Miss's schedule, you know, where is the loss going to come if it doesn't come against Auburn? And it certainly, they could go lose at Fayetteville. You're not gonna bet your house on it. And they could lose at home to Mississippi State. But the Egg Bowl is it's the way that it's gone in recent years. I would never like the road team in that game. So yeah, I think the attitude that you have to have is don't wait for it to happen later. And later, the other thing about that is that if Auburn beats Ole Miss, then Alabama's win over Auburn is going to be more impressive to the selection committee. You know, the fact that you lost to Ole Miss is kind of canceled out by the fact that that it's undone by the door having been open for you to get to the SEC championship game. If you win the conference, the fact that you lost to Ole Miss is not a big deal. But winning the conference is the most important thing, I think, for anybody in the SEC at this point, because that's your meal ticket. Okay, there's no doubt the SEC champion is going to be in this playoff. And so the one way that you don't have to worry about what the committee's going to do is to win the league. And so the first step to that is getting into the championship game.
Brad Edwards right now, ESPN college football analyst right now inside the game here in Tuscaloosa on Tide 99.1. With all due respect, Brad, you live this stuff. You spend, I don't know how many hours a day, 7 days a week, crunching the numbers. At the end of the day, do you think the average selection committee will spend the same amount of time that we do analyzing college football into this Final Four teams?
Well, I think they will, because their job kind of requires them to. At least they're going to sit there for a lot of the day on Monday and Tuesday discussing this stuff. They're doing it as we speak, sitting in a room in Dallas and beginning this process, and we'll see the results of that tomorrow night. I think the bigger question is, do they all look at football the same way? Because their job is to pick the four best teams, ultimately, or to put together a top 25 in order of who's best. I think the key here is that best could mean something different to each person in that committee, or maybe there are four or five different definitions of best within the group. To me, and I think to a lot of people, what that means is if these teams played on a neutral field, who would win? That to me is who's best. But to some of them, either they don't look at it that way, and they might be more inclined to kind of, you know, look at resume type items to determine who's best, or they simply just don't have enough confidence in their ability to watch teams and determine who's best from that. And I do think there will be some of that on the selection committee. I mean, you have people like Barry Alvarez, Tom Osborne, Pat Hayden, Oliver Luck, Tyrone Willingham, who have played and or coached so much football that they can watch these teams, and right or wrong, they have an opinion as to who's better between those teams. But then there are other people on the committee who might have a background where they don't feel comfortable making that determination from watching them play, that it's, you know, that they all look the same to them, and they might default to strength of schedule or conference championships or something like that. And ultimately, how the vote comes out depends on how many people in that room are on each side of that. And if there are six people out of the 12 that think that conference championships are really important, then that's ultimately what it's going to come down to, not necessarily who's really the best team on the field. And we have no way of knowing, because we're not allowed access to that room, but that's something that we'll try to figure out week after week whenever we see the rankings, and what can we read into it in terms of what they're placing a priority on. But we still will never know the answer to how much do conference championships matter until that very last day, because that'll be the only time the selection committee meets where they'll actually have that information that they can factor in, because up until that point, we won't know who the conference champions are.
Brad Edwards, ESPN college football analyst right now inside the game. Final question. I know you have a Heisman vote. You have a ballot. Right now, if the season ended, would Amari Cooper make your ballot?
Yeah, I actually have to do this every week. We have a thing called Heismanology that Joe Tessitore
sure,
does.
Sure.
And you probably see it out there. He polls all the Heisman voters at ESPN. We're not supposed to reveal our ballots. I don't think the committee would care about me doing it in late October, because it's obviously going to change. But I'll tell you, my ballot this week is Marcus Mariota at number one, Dak Prescott at number two, and Amari Cooper at number three. So he's on my radar for sure right now. I would gather from the results of recent weeks that he's not as high on some of the others. But I think he's I think he's in the conversation, but you know, he's gonna have to continue to put up 100 plus per game with, you know, a number of touchdowns. And I think more than anything, he's going to have those big games against LSU, Mississippi State, and Auburn. And if he does, I think he's got a chance to be invited to New York. You know, it's not an award that's very easy for a receiver to win in general, and certainly not if you're a receiver who doesn't return kicks. But, you know, he's having a special type of season, and you don't usually see a highly ranked team have one guy who is catching such a high percentage of their passes, or especially such a high percentage of their yards and touchdowns. And so he has a chance, certainly, to have some big games with everybody watching, and we'll see how he does.
Well, I don't expect him to win it, but to be in that conversation would be, I'm sure, a great accomplishment for him. He's a very humble guy, and he's somebody that's I've enjoyed covering since he's been in Tuscaloosa. And he will, at the end of the day, he's 55 yards away right now from breaking the all-time receiving yard record at Alabama, and he'll go down as certainly one of the great receivers. It would be nice to get that accomplishment of just being recognized.
You know, I mean, off the top of my head, and I've been covering the Heisman for as long as I've been at ESPN, I might be missing someone, but the only receiver that I can ever remember being in New York for the ceremony who did not return kicks is Larry Fitzgerald. And I could be forgetting somebody, but if that's true, that's some pretty good company to be in.